Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt and Sprague continues.
So your wife tells you something. I need to know, where are we going with this?
Andy Dirt Johnson.
She said, you know what I think we should contemplate buying? She wants to put our kid on a leash.
Brandon Sprague.
It's like seeing randomly a tiger in a zoo. You just feel awful for it.
More Dirt and Sprague.
Look, she's an unbelievable mom. She carries all the weight in our family. I have to preface all this because she says I only throw her under the bus on the air.
So you just threw her under the bus.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland sports leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your Tuesdays are off to a good start.
Hooray!
Sprague made me very uncomfortable in the opening segment of the show today. What else did we talk about? Jalen Hurts threw four picks.
Forgot about that. The hot music teacher.
Yeah.
That he couldn't say was hot, but clearly you could tell that she's hot.
Justin Herbert got a big win last night on Monday Night Football, and we talked a lot of NFL. Brian Baldinger joined us an hour ago, so if you missed any of the first 2 hours, there's a quick summation of what you missed. Like, I do want to continue on this Mac Hamill conversation for a moment.
Yeah.
Because I do find it interesting. Like, somebody commented, by the way, get your mail sack questions, and we'll get into them at 9:15.
We got more cuts, too, if you want some more audio.
I don't really, you know. Yeah, what else we got? Let's see what else we got from Matt Campbell. What else did he fire
on
why
yesterday? He left Iowa State. He was there forever, right?
He was there for 10. Did you, by the way, did you see the AD press conference after he left?
Iowa State?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I don't know if there's a better way that both sides could have handled this. One, I think when you're replaced for 10 years, it's not like you're bolting after 16 months, right? 10 years is
no.
A long run.
No.
There was no drama. There was no ongoing, will he, won't he, will he, won't he.
I think
he.
They were all upfront honest, like, and he said, this is a dream job for me.
Dude, go watch the AD press conference, because ADs can get real butthurt in moments like this. And he was like, he has nothing to apologize for. I guess he has older parents who live in the region. Mm-hmm. His mom has cancer or something. He's like, part of it for him is, yes, money and a bigger job, but also part of it is going to be closer to home and, you know, the opportunities that that provides for him and his family. And the AD essentially cried. He was like, man, I love Matt Campbell. He was honest and upfront with me the entire time. Nothing caught us off guard. He owes us no apologies. He, you know, worked his ass off for 10 years. It was as perfectly handled of a divorce as you could have in college football.
Did you watch his?
I didn't watch the whole thing, no, but I saw snippets of it.
I mean, he basically stepped to the podium, instantly cried.
Yeah.
And part of that was him thanking Iowa State probably more than anybody's ever thanked their previous program or institution ever. And a big part of that was the AD. It's one of those weird, and you feel bad for Cook fans. But it was like one of those, I think everybody was cool with him going to that job, and they also knew they wanted Jimmy Rogers because Jimmy Rogers has wanted that job for a long time. And
Rogers said that before every game he coached at South Dakota State, Washington State, the AD would send him a text telling him good luck.
Relationship business, man. I mean, we can think that's weird, but it probably was just standard. Hey, good luck today. You know what I mean?
Go like, get a win,
you're keeping a good relationship. He was in that region a long time. So here he was on why Iowa State. NFL came calling a couple times. You know other colleges came calling. Washington, as you've mentioned on the show before, like that was a job he was interested in.
He was very seriously. When they hired Jed Fish, it was essentially him and Fish.
I'd love to ask a poll question to Husky fans of like, would you rather have Matt Campbell blind, not knowing what it's going to be, or are you liking Fish to the point where you still go back and take Fish?
Yeah.
But here is why he left Iowa State.
And I think the hard thing for me ever wanting to leave Iowa State at times and getting close, but saying, you know what, it's just not the right time, is I never wanted to be that coach that was, oh man, I'm going to jump from job to job. Like, if we were ever to leave Iowa State, I wanted to go somewhere and I wanted to finish my career and I wanted to stand for something that's bigger than Matt Campbell. It's not about me, but about the players, and represents something bigger than myself. And I found that. And I couldn't be more humbled and more grateful for that opportunity.
I take him at his word there. Like, he's the kind of guy, when you're at a place like Iowa State for 10 years and you got bigger jobs sniffing down your neck every offseason, essentially for the last, like, what year was it that they beat Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl? Was that the COVID year? That was like 5 years ago, and they had Brock Purdy. That team was loaded. Like,
Brees Hall,
built up for that year, and they smoked Oregon in that bowl game. Mm-hmm. And that was like, oh my God, Iowa State's winning. And then it kind of became a normal thing for them. They were in the Big 12 championship last year. They played Arizona State. If they win that game, they're in the college football playoff. But Arizona State beat them that day because Scatabue was great, and Arizona State's offense was just too tough to stop. If you're telling me that, like, I know he's had job offers essentially every offseason that he's been there, I take him at his word. Like, he's not going to be a guy who bolts Penn State in 3 years for a bigger gig. I think he views this as a chance to go closer to home, big-time program, good resources, and I got a chance to retire here if I can win enough games.
I'm not trying to speculate or try to say this in any way that's, like, in a jokey manner. I feel like if Lanning ever left Oregon, it'd be a similar vibe.
Yeah, I mean, if you're at a, like, what's, to me, 4 years isn't quite enough. I don't know if it's six or seven.
I'm
like
saying if he leaves, we're talking years the road. Like, it's going to be an emotional situation
for both
sides.
For sure it will be. But, I this comment came in. It's just college football is about money and money to spend. Where did it go? I lost the rest of it. Same for Matt Campbell at Penn State. Does he have $30 million to spend on players? Then he will be successful. And I understand that line of thinking. Money is certainly important in modern college athletics. Nobody disagrees with that. I guess the retort that I would have is, did Billy Napier have money to spend at Florida? Did Brian Kelly have money to spend at LSU? Did Penn State go out and get the two biggest wide receivers in the transfer portal, arguably last offseason, and spend a ton of money on those guys?
That didn't play out.
But that's my point, though. Like, this idea that just, it's like the idea that if you spend big in free agency, it's automatically going to generate wins. It just is not always the case. There is still a coaching aspect of it. There's a recruitment aspect of it. And I still think, and some people might think this is naive and dumb, but I don't care. Relationships are a massive part of this, and the relationship that the coach has to the player, to the recruit, to retain your own guys, like, that is a huge part of it. The money is obviously a big deal to all these players, but again, the idea is if there are some that are spending money at this level and some are not spending money, and hey, I'm going to go play for Penn State pro bono because I love Matt Campbell, that doesn't exist. So you're going to be offering a lot of money with your $30 million war chest, which reportedly he is going to get at Penn State. So is every other school that you're recruiting against. And so, and to me, it's a lot deeper than just saying, do you have money? Because Clemson spent a lot of money on their roster last year. What the hell happened to them?
Yeah.
So a lot of places where it doesn't work out.
I think the retort to that would be what Billy Napier did with the Cajuns versus going to a level up at Florida is not what Campbell did.
And
at
I'm not
Iowa
making
State
that comparison. No.
And I would even throw Brian Kelly in this, though, too, because we all thought Brian Kelly was a done, like, that. That dude's going to be in the playoff. That dude might win a national championship finally because he was good at Notre Dame. And then he gets fired. And we find out that he basically had checked out. He'd pulled a Jimbo Fisher.
Yep.
That he wasn't putting in the time and the effort you kind of need. And this world of player relationship, I agree. It's a relationship-driven business now with these players and the NIL and the portal. But we found out he wasn't doing it. Dabo Swinney does spend a lot on his roster. He also refuses to hit the portal. He refuses to evolve with the way the sport is. Instead, he likes to complain and tell you how ridiculous all this is while still taking the next $100 million contract. I don't know if Matt Campbell will beat Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, all these Big Ten teams. What I do know is that Matt Campbell has a proven, solidified track record from Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can win at Iowa State, and then you plug in the resources, I don't know why I wouldn't believe it can't work. And I'm not saying that you're saying it's impossible.
No, that's not my
argument. It's more, though, that, like, even the examples we tout, I view it differently. I don't know what the ceiling of a Penn State is. I kind of tend to think it's what James Franklin was. But I'll also throw out there, I thought that and said the same things about Kirby Smart in Georgia. They had won one national championship. It was like 1981 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he went there and people were like, well, Mark Richt wasn't good enough. And I'm like, you're Georgia. You weren't winning titles in my life. You were always the second-tier SEC team to whoever's reigning supreme at the time. And so he goes there, and it's turned around. So I don't know if Matt Campbell does that at Penn State, but I think Big Ten fans should be like,
They desperately need this to work out.
They got a good – yeah, they do, but
I'm
saying –
the conference needs it.
The conference needs it, but also, like, I'm just a little surprised that maybe you're not a little more nervous about it because of his track record.
Yeah, I just – part of that is not necessarily a knock on Matt Campbell. It's also the vote of confidence in where Oregon is at and where they're going.
But like, he's a good player coach. You would agree with that, right?
I think Matt Campbell is a great coach.
And that's a big part of this.
I got a buddy on his staff who swears by him and says he's the real deal and he loves him and he will follow him to every job and he's now following him to Penn State. So I get all of it. All I'm trying to point out is two things. One – when you go from a small pool to a big pool, it doesn't always translate. And two, the idea that now that they're adding resources into his, you know, budget to work with NIL expenditures and all that, my only argument against that is that every other school you're recruiting against also has money. Like, they all have money. Everybody's got money to spend. And so this idea, well, now he's got money to spend, so does everybody else, and you still got to go win those recruiting battles. And then if you aren't, excuse me, are you going to get into a point where you're overpaying for guys in the portal? So I got a little gurgle in my throat.
That sounded like you were drowning. Can you pull that?
Pull that audio, please.
That sounded like you were drowning.
But like paying the wrong guys. Like, for example, last offseason in the portal, them getting Hudson and what was the Pena out of Syracuse.
Yep.
Pena was one of the best wide receivers in the country 2 years ago.
Yes.
Hudson was a stud at USC, made some unbelievable catches in his time there. Those were two of the biggest offseason additions. Oregon went out and added Malik Benson in the portal and nobody made any sense of it. Who had the better year?
Right.
So this idea that you just went out and spent money on big-time wide receivers, you still got to get the production out of them. And Matt Campbell very well may be able to do that.
Yep.
What I would the biggest fear that I have out of all of this for Penn State is exactly what you brought up in the last segment and exactly why they fired James Franklin. The idea there is that Penn State is a perennial national title contender, and I don't think it's 1985 anymore. That place is in the middle of nowhere. There is not an airport. You got to drive in and out. And so the fan support is great. There's money to spend. It's also not easy to convince kids to go there. Franklin is a dynamic recruiter. We've seen that. His recruiting classes were never in the top five when he was at Penn State, ever. He never out-recruited Ohio State. He very rarely out-recruited Michigan. And so, once Oregon joined the conference, he did not recruit them either.
Can this guy do that?
I don't think that he can. I don't think that he can. I think he can be a very good coach. I think he can win 8, 9, 10 games every year. But then you're back in the same exact problem that you were in of how long is that good enough?
Yeah.
Now, maybe if he pulls off a random upset win every other year, that's enough for Penn State fan. James Franklin didn't beat a top 10 team essentially for a decade, and they ran him out of town for it. So if he does it every other year and you pull off some upsets, maybe that'll be enough to keep him satisfied. But that's my biggest fear out of all this, is that I think they got a good head coach who's going to stabilize things for them, who is definitely going to win games. Is he going to win a national championship? Is he going to go to the Final Four of the playoff every year? That I don't know. And then are they going to run him out of town after 5 years?
So
if he doesn't do that.
If you're looking at it through a local lens here, Oregon wins the Big Ten last year. They're a one-loss team who, because of tiebreaker scenario, you're not in the conference title game again this year. Indiana wins the whole enchilada. Who in the Big Ten, with the addition of Matt Campbell, who is the proverbial year in and year out to you threats? We know Ohio State is.
Ohio State's the only one for me right now.
Not Indiana?
Indiana is an awesome story. I still think there's a question of can they do this year in and year out throughout the portal without recruiting at a top 25 level.
Oh.
Indiana's unbelievable.
So
but
one more year for you to enter that conversation? Or
yeah,
like
I mean, I think
more?
The longevity of showing that you can win at an elite level without recruiting at a top 25 level, that does not happen in college football regularly. And so they are the dominant team this year. They won the Big Ten. They beat Oregon fair and square. But no, in terms of fearing them year in and year out.
So it's only Ohio State?
It's only Ohio State for me.
Cocky sniffing dirt is back.
Who else should I be scared of? Give me the teams.
Well,
Michigan and Sherrone Moore scare you in his workman's jacket going 7-5 again?
Wearing gloves.
Jed Fish, that freaking you out with his 5'2" quarterback? Lincoln Riley finally taking recruiting seriously in year 4? Congrats on your class. That'll develop in 3 years.
Surely none of this will age poorly. I'm just glad you're back.
Wisconsin's
I haven't had you all year.
Wisconsin's keeping Luke Fickell.
Ooh, the only time you have cocky sniffed was after the UW game all year. Chip on the shoulder. Nobody's giving us a chance.
I mean, nobody's giving us a chance. That's for sure. We all know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody's counting us
out. Three touchdown favorites.
Matt Rhule just fired Dylan Raiola's uncle. He's going to enter the portal.
Matt Rhule is not in this. No.
So that's my question. Like, if you were an Oregon fan, who else would you be scared of?
Look, scared is a different question than like...
I'm not saying none of these teams can beat Oregon. Of course they can.
I understand what you're saying.
Year in and year out.
I wouldn't say the term scared. I'd more be like, damn. And he's one of them. I think he's a good coach. I think he's a great player coach, a good relationship coach. I don't know what their internal ceiling is. I think we all kind of have an idea of what it is based on what we saw. But in a year-in, year-out basis, like, yeah, dude, I think that guy's a really good coach. And I'm fascinated to see how he does the first 2 years with those level of resources paired with his player relationship ability.
I think James Franklin is a good coach, too.
Yeah, but you mentioned their additions on offense this year. How did you miss on that?
Yeah.
And look, it kind of ran its course at Penn State.
It definitely did. Let's stick in college football. One coach handling things the right way, because not many people are right now. I love how we've all unified as a college football community to be outraged by this one program. Another one who handles it the right way and the way it should be handled. We'll get to that coming up next. Also, is this the worst all time? Next on The Fam.
You know your customers. Ralph likes his coffee black on Fridays, but Mondays he takes a little cream. Jennifer comes in every 3 years when her lease is up to get the newer and better model. And for some reason, pepperoni pizza sells like crazy on Friday nights. Who knew? At Odyssey, we have the expertise to get your media plan done right. With ads like you're hearing right now, to targeted social media campaigns, search engine optimization, and location-based advertising. Advertise with Odyssey and help us grow your business. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, the meltdown is in full effect. We'll have some fun with that. Millsack coming up, final hour. Get your questions into the fan text line, 503-864-6326.
Which four should I put on a poll question of who was the best hire in college football?
Oh, this offseason cycle?
Lane, Campbell. Do you want me to go a goalish? Do you want to go a different direction with it?
I think you put James Franklin at Virginia Tech on there.
Franklin at Tech.
That's going to be such a fascinating parallel to here, watching Virginia Tech and Penn State over the next 3 to 4 years. And who Virginia Tech's going to have a much easier path than Penn State because the ACC's warm dog water.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm with Swag. Franklin should be on there.
I need a fourth.
Do we go local?
Do we go local guys?
Stein Shepherd? Or Lapoy?
Or Shepherd?
Targeting Power 4 teams. Yes, sorry. That's my bad.
Sorry.
Different categories
that's
here. Brian Hartline. You want to put sure. Brian Hartline in there?
We're ready to be big dog. We're ready to be big dog.
I think, why don't we do those three and then an other, like, respond with? Because some to be like, well, what about this guy? Why did you put this guy?
Yeah.
And then people can respond with whoever their answer all is. Right. So I like that idea. Where are you guys at, by the way, on Stein and Lapoy? Interesting places, right, where Kentucky's a basketball school.
I really want to see what Lapoy's coordinator hires, because you mentioned warmed over dog water. Lapoy is a dynamic recruiter.
Without a doubt.
That's how his
entire career has
been made.
The quarterback said he's going to stay.
Did you see what he did, by the way? So he finished his press conference, Lapoy did. He then, this sums up his personality, and this is why I think he's going to be successful there. He then jumped on they didn't have a PJ for him at Cal. He jumped on a commercial flight.
And went to Hawaii?
And flew to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And sat down with the, where's our drop at, our Nimic drop?
Jaren Sagapotu,
whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah.
This guy?
Jaren Sagapotu, whatever.
And sat in his living room from 12:30 a.m. until 2:30 a.m. in the same suit that he wore at his press conference. And then they tweeted out a picture. And Cal fans were like, didn't that the suit he was wearing 8 hours ago at the press conference? Yeah. And then he flew back commercial from Hawaii, which I know. But
I think I can't believe, if you would have asked me this 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe three. I would have maybe laughed at you. I think I'm going to go LaPoy a little more than Stein.
Having a better chance of succeeding. Also, the conference is a big part of it. Like, he's at Kentucky, good luck.
What's the expectation at Kentucky, by the way? Because Cal's is just don't be below 500 for 8 years. Shout out our guy. I love our guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a family friend. But that was where they ultimately decided to go, was, hey, you've been here for 9 years. Record's not amazing overall.
I think if you're living in the 8-4 world,
Stoops had a couple of those. They were like, you're not good enough now. Get out of here.
He
also was very bad as a person.
So he took over in 2013 at Kentucky. He was a long tenured coach.
Yeah.
Somebody had a post about the longest tenured SEC coach now. I imagine it's Kirby at this point. Right? Has to be?
Yeah.
I would think
that would be
so.
My guess.
Since 2013 at Kentucky, he won 8 games 1, 2, 3 times. He had 2 10-win seasons, 2018, 2021, and then he won 8 games in 2019.
It's going to be interesting to see when they go to actually a 9-game conference schedule.
It's going
to
make it harder.
You take a cupcake out of your non-conference.
And Will Stein is also not.
Thank God, by the way.
There's the balance here, right? Like, they're each unique examples. One is a guy who's known solely as a recruiter.
Yeah.
And one guy is solely known as an X's and O's. Like, Will Stein's not known in the Oregon circles as a dynamic recruiter. He wasn't bad. He had great relationships with players. They all loved playing for him.
Right.
But he wasn't pounding the pavement, if you will, and locking up all these deals. That's not what he was known for. So I'll be curious how both of them turn out.
And you're picking...
I would take Tosh, too.
Yeah.
Part of it is just the fit and the idea that he's in the ACC, and I think it's easier to win games in the ACC. And so I think the expectations aren't that different at either place. Oh. And if he can go recruit at a decent level, like, let's pull up 24/7. I'll just use their ACC recruiting classes and see who are the classes in the ACC.
Well, I mean, Miami's going to be number one.
Miami certainly is number one.
After that, I have no clue
Where's
who number
Clemson?
Two.
So, let's see. Miami had the 10th-ranked recruiting class in the country this year, so not bad at all.
Georgia Tech? Louisville?
Next is Florida State, and everybody's killed their class because they have a bunch of filler at the back end of it, only 12 blue-chip players. They are 14th.
Mm.
North Carolina, very similar class, 17th. Clemson, 18th.
Oof.
Virginia Tech ended up in the top 25.
How do you got two natties and you've brought your program to that level?
Yep. Stanford had the 33rd ranked recruiting class in the country.
I also think LaPoy...
And then you're Georgia Tech 38. So that's the pool that you're swimming in.
I think LaPoy being... And look, it's one extra year, but LaPoy being here all four with Lanning, and because they're both such defensive guys, not that Lanning doesn't have his hands all over the program,
sure,
but
of course he does.
I think there's an element too that I think Taj, through his entire career to now, learned. I just think he's learned a little bit more. Whereas Stein, he came from UTSA.
UTSA.
And he's been here
super young
3 years as well. He's very young. He's very smart. As you mentioned, probably his best years as a play caller. I think because of the conference combination, I think I'm going to go Taj out of those two.
Should be noted, by the way, since we're on the topic, and I'll kick the other stuff down a segment here. The reporting, and Lanning did not answer the questions on this. He had a press conference on Sunday for their playoff, the playoff press conference or whatever. And he did not want to talk about it because he said the time is to talk about this team and we'll answer this at a later date. But all the intel and reporting is that they are going to promote in-house at both jobs. Drew Mehringer is going to get the OC job. He's their tight end coach. He's been there since Lanning hired him, or since Lanning got hired, I should say. And then Chris Hampton, who was the defensive coordinator to Lane, who they hired to come be their secondary coach, safeties coach, is reportedly going to take over at defensive coordinator. So I thought that was interesting. It's the first time he's had to hire another DC because Tosh has been there all 4 years. He did have to find an OC after 1 year, and he went out of house. He didn't stay in-house for that, and he went and found Will Stein. And so he's going the in-house route, which I thought was interesting, but I think he's built up the trust of the hires have been good, the talent is there.
Yeah.
You'll be all right.
To say the least, I was going to say, like, until we see one of them not pan out as well, like, we just trust the process.
Yep, so that's the reporting out of Oregon. Okay, I didn't get to it here. A coach who I would like to sing his praises, and is this the worst we have ever seen? We'll talk about those two things next. A couple of quick tidbits out of the world of Major League Baseball. It's winter meeting. Are you guys following the hot stove? Is your stove simmering?
How could you not?
Stop me if you heard this before. The Dodgers signed somebody.
It's time to nut up or shut up.
Edwin Diaz coming to town. How many weeks into the baseball season until Swag complains about the bullpen of the Dodgers on their route to 3 consecutive championships?
Edwin Diaz, Sprague,
this guy sucks, man.
If we could only spend money on a bullpen, we'd be fine.
Dodgers and Edwin Diaz in agreement on a deal. And Kyle Schwarber, I didn't see this one coming. I don't know about you guys. Re-signing with Philly, 5-year, $150 million deal.
Yeah, I don't know why. I kind of thought Philly would end up getting him again, but certainly we joked a lot about the Dodgers somehow getting him into the lineup. The Phillies are desperate, man. They don't want to lose Schwarber. He's a fan favorite.
I've heard a lot of rumors that they weren't going to pony up for as long as Schwarber.
Well, is it an interesting spot? Like, I don't know.
He's not getting any younger.
Neither is Harper. Their roster is old.
I want you to envision a world where you have the best pitcher in the world on your team.
Okay.
But your team is warm dog crap. And there is a report that comes out that they're going to be aggressive this offseason. They're going to offer Kyle Schwarber 4 years, 100, and then you see him sign for 5, 150. At that point, I think I'm just bunting. I'm quitting. You guys were too cheap to go get Kyle Schwarber.
I'm assuming we're talking about the Pirates here.
We are talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, I would have quit 10 years ago if I were a Pirates fan. Why would you? What would you hold on for? The ownership doesn't care. There's nothing there. All you're doing is torturing yourself. They're never going to win, ever. It'll never happen.
Never say never.
I will say never for them. Until their owner dies, maybe they got a shot. But I don't know if he has kids, and if their kids are as cheap as he is, they're never going to win. It'll never happen.
The minute they get a catcher that goes up to bat with no gloves on, there's hope. There's hope.
Jason Kendall ain't walking through that locker room anytime soon, dude.
Jason Kendall Jr., welcome back.
It's been really fun to watch the college football world kind of come together and just take a steaming dump all over Notre Dame. Somebody tweeted us a meme yesterday of Rudy in a Miami Letterman's jacket, which was just wonderful. Like, just everybody's having a lot of fun at their expense. Like, oh, no, something bad happened to you. Like, it's been a lot of fun.
It has been interesting to watch, like, it doesn't matter who you hate or love in that sport. If you're not a Notre Dame fan, everybody hates you. And if you're a Notre Dame fan, it's you against everybody.
Well, because they're just stupid. Like, the fact that you can't understand a team who has the same record as you in the head-to-head win got in the playoff over you, like, how could you not wrap your mind around that?
They're mad at the structure, not the Miami thing, I think. I think seeing two group of six teams in, or a group of five this year, a group of six next year, I think that's what's pissing them off. And I'm not a big Notre Dame guy. Like, I like seeing the Golden Domers once in a while.
Them
but
being in the playoff is good. We get it. They're a good team. We get it. But, stop it. You've played three good teams all year, and you lost to two of them.
The bowl game thing is where you get me to kind of be like, you're being a little bit of a bitch.
Yeah, you're taking your ball and
going
home.
We're not
going
to go play. We don't want to play. Go play a football game. Go enjoy it. I know who you're going to play here, and I'm with you 100%. This is the right way to handle it.
Well, look, everybody politics for their team, right? Final weeks of the year, you want to do whatever you can to convince the committee, although I don't think the committee is listening to a coach press conference, but Mario, politics, Sark politics, Manny Diaz politics. Like, that's what teams do, right? When the season's over and the dust is settled, I just need you to acknowledge one thing, and I have not heard, to my knowledge, now maybe a Notre Dame fan will come at me and say, well, actually, this was said in this interview, blah, 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 but a lot of it is blaming the ACC. How dare the ACC turn their backs on us, even though we're only in one toe of football, and then all the other sports, we needed a home, and you're a convenient spot for us.
Did he expect the conference to not support itself and, like, to also cape up for Notre Dame?
If you want full support of the conference, then join the ACC, and guess what? If you would have joined the ACC, you know who probably would have won the conference? And then you know who would have been guaranteed a spot in the college football playoff? Bingo. So, right, like, I haven't seen any of these kind of things of saying, you know what, guys, let's all take a deep breath. The reason we're not in is because we lost to Miami. And if we beat Miami, we're in the college football playoff. It's a very simple answer. I saw this from a coach earlier this week, and I thought, you know what? What a breath of fresh air. There's another team out there who had an argument. Same record as Notre Dame in a tougher schedule than Notre Dame, and they played a conference schedule. And here is the head coach of that team, Clark Leon, why his team did not make the playoff.
You know, we happen to be on the wrong side of that in this moment. But that's no one's fault except for our own. You know, we had our opportunities and we didn't do enough. And so we are not victims in this process. We're our ownership is in coming up short. I think it's a reminder of how critical every moment is, every snap, every possession. And there's a lot to learn in this season because we want to be back in these moments. But as it is, you know, we'll spend time in the off season trying to get the system more into focus with where the game has gone. In the meantime, we're gonna celebrate the hell out of going and playing in Tampa and having some fun together one last time.
That's how you handle it. It's our fault, man. We were down by 30 points to Texas, and that's why we didn't make the playoff. It's our fault. And some of the ranked wins that we had at the end of the year, South Carolina was number 11 when they beat them. Mm-hmm. Clearly not the 11th best team in the country. LSU, I believe, was number 10 when they beat them. Clearly not the 10th best team in the country. Well, and then they got the ranked win over Tennessee at the end of the year. So the resume wasn't quite as strong. And if you would have pulled off one of the wins or been more competitive throughout the entire game against Texas or not let the Alabama game get out of hand, maybe you have a stronger argument. Yeah. This is how you do it. You point it at yourself and say, it's our fault and we got to be better next year. It's simple.
Well, I said yesterday I was surprised Notre Dame decided to opt out because I view Marcus Freeman very similar to Clark Lee. And I haven't heard Freeman talk yet. If you have, then correct the record. That to me is a great cut. Because that's a true leader of a program that has established something, that has built something.
Signed the number one quarterback in the country, by the way. Joe Curtis coming to town.
Look, Franklin had a couple good years there. That's their best team ever. Yeah, Pavi is a Heisman finalist. Like, that's massive to have a guy represent your logo in New York. And I love the very end. We have one more game that we're excited to go play together. And then all these guys are going to be gone, and he's going to have to try to build this back up. I also think the underrated part of doing this is, one, you don't take an unnecessary shot at the committee or whoever's going to be a part of the process. And two, what did I tell you the reason Vanderbilt was going to get left out if they were a two-loss team? They weren't quite looked at as an SEC juggernaut the way these other teams get benefit, right?
Nope, they were not.
Now he's laid the groundwork. Vandy is to be taken seriously. Vandy is a really well-coached team. And when he had an opportunity to rail against the system and cry, woe is us, he said, we weren't good enough. We're going to work harder to try to be back here next year. And now when that committee looks at a two-loss Vanderbilt team next year, if they're in that position, I think they're going to start getting that benefit. We're going to be looking at them and saying, no, they're going to get the consideration here because it takes a while to build up that credibility. Vanderbilt's never been one of those schools. And I think this dude is leading within the program, and I think he's kind of leading it out of saying, no, 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 we'll get recognized, but we got to earn that recognition a little bit more than just one season.
It is. I agree with you completely. Oklahoma, same record, 10-2. Now, I know Oklahoma had the win at Alabama, and Vanderbilt lost that game, so the quality of win, there's no comparison to it. They both were dominated by Texas.
That would be a fun game, by the way. Vanderbilt-Oklahoma, play for your playoff spot.
Right, and that's, I mean, they're both 10-2, but ultimately, I've flip-flopped on this a ton over the years and how I want the format to look. There's a mail sack question, so we'll add more to it later on in the show. I like being in a spot where there are teams that you could look at and say you were worthy of competing for a playoff, but you didn't make it. I think that's a good playoff system. Like that continues to add importance or keep the importance of the regular season to where it matters, and you're not just letting everybody in. And there's a benefit to it. Like, Notre Dame has an argument. Notre Dame is playing as good as anybody in the country late in the season. Nobody disagrees with that. But your resume wasn't good enough to get in. You played three teams with a pulse all year, and you lost to two of them. And yeah, they were close games, but you lost two out of three. Vanderbilt had a great season this year, but you were you got smoked on the road. That final score
that
is incredibly misleading.
Tough.
You got dominated in that game, and you hung with Alabama for a long time, and then they pulled away, and they beat you by 16 in the fourth quarter. And so, like, I like that there are teams that you could say, man, that's a good resume. BYU, like, I like being in a spot where there are teams that are worthy of consideration. They get left out because then it, again, harps on the importance of the regular season, which is something that we don't want to lose in the nature of college football. So I think it's a good spot. I respect the hell out of Clark Lee. He's done an unbelievable job there. And I love the answer of, like, this is our fault, dude. If we play better against Texas, we're in the college football playoff. Win your games. It's all in your own control. It wasn't like Texas was an unbeatable juggernaut this year. They were 9-3. Mm-hmm. Florida beat them. Mississippi State damn near beat them. And Kentucky beat them. You had a shot and you didn't show up in that game. And that's why you're not in the playoff.
I think a fun thing to do, and I didn't see the mail sack question you're alluding to that we'll get to in the final hour, but I was thinking about this a little bit yesterday because I saw the Clark Lee stuff, and obviously the Notre Dame narrative took real hold of the landscape yesterday because the AD's mad at the ACC, and then the collective world hates Notre Dame. I think a fun way, because there's a lot of like opt-out of bowl games right now, and even though I don't really watch all of these bowl games, I'm not one that like wants to watch pointless football. I'd rather just watch a TV show and catch up on some stuff that I haven't watched in months. I think a really fun thing to try to entice these Texases, these Vandys, these Notre Dames, BYU, you mentioned, you need to do like six, the six who are just on the edge of being in it, why don't you get these bowl games, whatever they're spending, and do like a next tier playoff where the winner gets an allotted amount towards their NIL budgets? And so you're getting extra incentive to play these bowl games.
Would the kids play them that are going to the NFL?
Oh, I certainly don't know if they would. You could probably make an argument they wouldn't, and I'm not going to argue they will.
But it'd be the same
BYU,
as a bowl game.
BYU, Notre Dame, Texas, yeah. Vanderbilt, like
a next best of the rest.
yeah, kind of basically. Yeah. And then you can still use the bowl sponsorships. It's just a way to, like, you can say, well, it means nothing, and I'd say, well, that's why you make the financial incentive. But it's also a way to get. Like, I really am pissed. I really wanted to watch BYU Notre Dame. I don't know if Jeremiah Love plays. I don't know if some of the seniors at BYU plays. That's a fun football game to me. Yeah. And you're going to give me a reason to watch a pointless bowl game? That's one of them. I'm not going to watch all of these, you know, the Maction team against the other whatever conference team. That's a way to get me personally as a sports fan, and that's why I'm viewing this selfishly. I'd watch that. Watching Vanderbilt beat Notre Dame.
Be fun, man. I'd watch that game.
As one of the teams left out of, like, yeah, maybe you guys made the argument. We have the ultimate argument. We were the best of this group.
Yeah, I'm with you there. There's got to be a way to rethink it. We do have mail sack questions coming in on both those topics. So we'll get to those coming up at 9:15. One more in the college football world, and then I want to dive back into the NFL at the top of the hour. A walk down memory lane, and let's question, is this the worst we've ever seen? That is next on 105.1 FM, The Fam.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The meltdown is in full effect. We'll get to that coming up top of the hour. Mail sack at 9:15. But this is a segment about where Sprague was right.
What?
That doesn't happen. You know, hey, blind squirrels, what's the saying? You called it, and it has been made official. We have our Heisman finalists, ladies and gentlemen. And the follow-up question to that is, one, let's find a fun way to talk about this while also taking a steaming dump all over it.
Yeah.
What's a Heisman moment you remember the most?
Moment or the winner?
Like the winner, the ceremony, the pomp and circumstance. What's the one that stands out the most in your head?
I hate that. Can I tell you why I hate this question?
Why do you hate that question?
I don't know if we ask it every year on the show, but I do feel like you and I say the same answer every time we do.
Charles Woodson?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Mariota winning a Heisman.
I would say Marcus, I remember, just because that was the first time for the Ducks.
It was a huge deal.
That was a massive deal. My team was the classiest of teams in the sport, writing a congratulatory paper thing. So you remember that when we win a Heisman in year two of Bama West. That's a good one. Yeah, because you had a local guy do it. Joey was in the running for it.
LaMichael was a finalist.
But for him to kind of break through, and it was like not even a question.
No, not really a debate.
He kind of ran away with it that year.
He had the hurdle against Oregon State that was the Heisman pose to begin with, and it's like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
So that's the one. Outside of that, though, like Woodson is one I definitely remember from my childhood that was such a big deal. The defensive player doing it, the punt returner, like that was just a cool and unique Heisman. There was also the local Northwest tie-in with Ryan Leaf being involved in that ceremony as well.
Reggie winning it because it was like,
Yeah, that was pretty easy. And then I remember, too, the other ones that stand out to me are the years that I was really pissed about the person who won winning.
Henry McCaffrey.
Like, that's one I will never forget. How Christian McCaffrey, doing what he did not win a Heisman Trophy. Because all his games were on at 10:30 at night, East Coast time, and Derrick Henry played for Alabama. And Derrick Henry's a beast. We all knew he was a beast. But Christian McCaffrey should have won the Heisman that year.
I thought last year's was fun. I know Colorado wasn't a playoff team, and Boise was...
I didn't watch much of the ceremony. When was the last time you remember watching the ceremony?
That's probably Marcus.
Probably, yeah.
You want to be honest? I think who wins?
I'm trying to think of another year where I watched it since then. Yeah, one
that
he
won, 2014, right?
2014.
Yeah, dude. It might be like 10, 11 years. I saw a little bit of the ceremony last year, but like from start to finish, the speeches, all of it.
You watch the snippets on Twitter. You see the highlights you need to see, and you're like, all right, that's good. Remember Joey played the piano? Do you guys know Joey played the piano?
I've heard such reports.
Our finalists are in. Fernando Mendoza.
It's over. He's
come on down.
It's done. It's not going to be close.
Diego Pavia. Do tell. What do you got?
Shouldn't be in.
Oh, not even an invite, huh?
Shouldn't be a finalist.
27 touchdowns, 8 interceptions for Diego Pavia.
Good season.
What were his rushing yards? 826 rushing yards and 9 touchdowns.
Yeah, good season.
So 36 total TDs.
Yeah, no, good season.
Okay. Jeremiah Love.
Yep.
Deserving.
Yep.
And last but not least, as Swag has called him in the updates all day, Justin Sayan of Ohio State.
Julian.
We're waiting for that one. Listeners have been.
You're not going to change either. I can tell by your face. You're not going to change anything.
I don't think you should. At this point, it's been going on all morning. Why the hell?
You know, he played Taj Lepoy. So
you do. You say Taj.
What?
You say Taj. Like Taj Gibson.
Ah.
You're Taj guy.
Ah, I figured out. Okay. You're a deflector. You like to point to other people and what they do wrong when people call you out on stuff. That's good to know.
Every time you say Taj Lepoy's name, people text in.
No, the YouTube chat. So somebody on YouTube goes
every time. Yeah. It's not Taj Sprague.
Tosh.
There you go.
Tosh.
Tosh, like Tosh.0.
Okay, how do you say Lupoy?
Lupoy.
Well, does Gruden say it right or do you say it right?
I forget, how does he say it?
You guys want to just address everything that we get wrong when somebody calls one of you out?
Jesus. Lupoy. Somebody getting angry over there. It's all right, calm down. It's a segment about where you're right.
You
don't need to get
Justin
defensive.
You called Justin saying, we're just saying it's Julian, and you're like, well, you do this wrong. You know, you're that guy, huh?
Actually, I'm not that guy because you said it in the last segment. I didn't say anything. I let it fly.
My bad on Tosh.
I let it go.
Tosh 2.0.
And Justin Sayan. Those are your four Heisman finalists right there.
He played like a Justin in the Big Ten.
Is this the worst group of finalists we've ever seen?
It's pretty bad. Pretty bad. He shouldn't be there either. Let's just be honest.
No, he shouldn't. No, he shouldn't. A top five player on his own team.
No.
He played one team with a pulse all year.
Wide receiver should be there for existing on the roster.
And he was terrible against both of them. He was terrible against Texas,
so
and he was not good in the Big Ten title game.
If you could redo the finals, I'd give the Texas Tech kid
He should be there. I have no problem with that. Mendoza, I'm fine inviting. Jeremiah Love definitely should.
Yep.
The Pavia one...
I thought I heard he's the only player with 4,000 combined yards of total offense.
Pavia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay inviting Pavi. I wouldn't give him the award, but I'm okay having him be amongst the finalists. The only one that I'm pissed about is Julian Sayan. Not that he's not a good—we all know he's good. He's good for their system. They might win a national championship this year, but, like, stop it, dude. It's the Heisman Trophy, man. He's done nothing this year to warrant winning the Heisman Trophy.
Haynes King should be there. Top 25 team.
I would vote for him over all of these guys. And talk about importance of your, like— Without Haynes King, what is Georgia Tech this year?
Oh, like,
you could rotate 15 different Justin Sayans at Ohio State, and you're going 11-12-1. Like, that's just the reality that they were living in with their schedule and the talent that they have. That's not the case at Georgia Tech. Dude. This will go down, though, as one of the more forgettable Heisman Trophy ceremonies and winners that we will ever have in the history of the award.
Anytime you play a Haynes King and a Georgia Tech, you need two Tosh Lupoys to prepare for that offense.
There you go. Is it Orioles or Oreos?
It's Woyos.
I don't know what happened in this segment.
I don't know. It got
Is this
flipped.
Because
it
I
started?
Was right? You guys
was,
got mad
yeah.
that I had I was right about something?
I was a little offended that you got this right, yeah.
Here's a question for you.
What do you got?
Will Dante be here next year in the ceremony?
Is he going to be back next year?
That's part of your
That's
guess.
That's part of the question.
Yeah, thank you. Look at you. You know how to play the game.
Yes. I think he's coming back next year.
Man, that NFL money's calling.
That's a lot of money.
A top five pick.
Top five pick money's good money. It's a bad quarterback class, too.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. He might be able to put himself in the running for the first quarterback.
The only reason I'm thinking is I have no inside knowledge on it. I don't, you know, there's no sourcing on this. It's just an idea of he's a guy who, the decision that he showed to go from UCLA to Oregon and sit for a year.
Yeah, he's already
told
been
me that he cares about development, and it's not, you know, he chased the immediate success right away.
Agree.
And it didn't work out for him. And I there's no doubt in my mind he would be a top 10 pick in the draft. He's that good, and his arm talent is that good. And again, the quarterback class this year blows. But I also think he's a guy who understands, like, it's still a very small sample size in college. What did he start at UCLA? Five games there, and then this year. So he started less than 20 games in his career. And a lot of these guys who have gone in and had success early in their NFL careers have done what? Outside of Drake May, who I can't remember how many games he started at North Carolina, but Daniels was a 4 or 5 year guy. Bo Nix was a 4 or 5 year guy. Like, there's a lot of these guys who you played so many snaps that you feel prepared, like you've seen everything. That's the only. It's because of his decision from UCLA to Oregon to sit for a year that I think he's going to make the decision of I need one more year of seasoning before I'm ready to be taken out of the oven.
So he will be in New York next year.
I think he will be in New York. If he comes back next year, he will be. And if he, I think he is coming back. So my answer is yes.
Okay,
Heisman finalists. We can also rip up our sticky notes. We both ended up being right. Brandon J. Sprague on May 28th said there is not a chance that he is in New York next year.
Boom.
I mean, there's kind of a chance. And I said somewhere around the NFL draft that it doesn't matter what the Tennessee Titans do with the number one overall pick. They will be ass next year.
They've been eliminated in their ass.
They were the first team to get eliminated. And you should have traded the number one overall pick last year.
But did they play their way out of the number one pick? Did Vegas now?
That's what we got to wonder. They're tied with Vegas with two wins.
That was a costly win for Tennessee.
Is it, though? They don't need the quarterback position.
But that number one trade haul that they could get moving down?
The Raiders are definitely taking quarterback if they're at one.
Without a doubt.
Oh, could you imagine Mendoza in Vegas? Could you imagine that city corrupting that poor soul? I want to thank God for the Bunny Branch. What happened to you?
Come on, Fernando. Come on, man. He's going to win the Heisman Trophy. Have fun Saturday night. Lots to get to in the final hour. Mail sack coming up, 9:15. Get your questions in. Let's start with the meltdown. It is commenced, and that's next on The Fam.
With the new year upon us, there's no better time to take control of your finances. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.